We're speaking via telephone with Michelle Jackson Jewell, the daughter of the late, great jazz innovator, Franz Jackson. Michelle, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for having me on your show.
It's an honor to have you on. Question I wanted to ask you was, of course, your father passed away 5 years ago in 2008 at the age of 95. He had played with some of the great innovators in the music. This is like pre-swing era. Tell us a little bit about your father's contribution during those years.
Well, the way that I like to explain my dad's history is essentially, to sum it up in a nutshell, he played with anyone who was anyone in jazz in the 20th century and actually beyond. But he started his career at the age of 16 with the great Albert Ammons, the boogie-woogie pianist. Mm-hmm. And he started playing with him doing what he used to call ballyhooing. They would ride along on the back of a wagon, and the band would play to drum up business for a train excursion between Chicago and St. Louis. And once they had enough people who bought tickets, they would load the band onto the train, and they would play all the way down to St. Louis, and then they would do the same thing and come back to Chicago. So that's essentially his first professional gig when he was 16. He went on to play with just about everybody. I mean, he played with Fletcher Henderson and Duke Ellington and Earl Hines, Roy Eldridge, Ella Fitzgerald, Billie Holiday, Cab Calloway. I mean, I could continue listing names ad nauseum, but suffice it to say that he was involved in the jazz scene from a very early age, and he continued that on right up until just a few months before he passed away.
He did a lot of great work with Fletcher Henderson's group. In fact, he replaced Ben Webster, did he not, at one point?
He did, actually, and that was really kind of a funny story. It was one that I always enjoyed hearing him tell. He went down to, I forget where Fletcher was playing, it might have been the Grand Terrace. He went down to sit in with the band, and he did, and not knowing that Ben Webster had actually left, he went down, went up onto the bandstand, sat in with the band, played the entire night with them, and nobody questioned him as to what he was doing there. They all assumed that the union had sent him, and mm-hmm. So he just kept playing. They started paying him, and he just kept coming back. So, yeah, it was a very funny story. Eventually, you know, they realized that, hey, you weren't a union guy, but by that time he had, you know, become such a part of the band that it didn't matter. They knew he could do the job. But, yeah, it was always such a funny story when he would tell that one.
Tell us about his record label, Pinnacle Recordings, and some of the great art that came from that particular label.
That was, you know, as you mentioned, he was truly an innovator. He started doing things on his own when people really weren't doing things on their own. It was a label that he started himself in Chicago, really out of necessity and out of a desire to simply do his records the way he wanted them done. I don't think he really wanted to be dictated to by another label, although he worked very harmoniously with a number of labels, including Del Mar in Chicago mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Riverside, and I don't think there was any animosity there, but, you know, he liked to have the control over how the music was produced, what cuts were going to end up on the album, and he did, oh my goodness, probably 6 or 7 of his own albums on Pinnacle, and ultimately branched out and helped a few other artists record their music through that label as well. Some of his earliest recordings on the Pinnacle label were Jazz, Jazz, Jazz and Night at Red Arrow, which was recorded live out at the Red Arrow nightclub in Stickney, Illinois in the 60s with a group of musicians that was just phenomenal. It was a marvelous band. So Pinnacle really, I think, stands as one of the prominent jazz labels in the Chicago area. It's, you know, it's now defunct, but when you talk about some of the music that was popular and really showcased the talent that was in the area in the 50s and 60s and 70s even, Pinnacle certainly stands out as one of those that that did exactly that.
I keep thinking of your dad among the giants in the Chicago jazz scene, because his you know, I lived there for 7 years, and then one of the things that I noticed was that the Chicago jazz scene is very, very, very eclectic.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe your father in the context of the Chicago jazz artist and the Chicago jazz scene?
Well, I think eclectic is a really good way to describe that scene in Chicago. Dad sort of helped bring about the whole scene in Chicago. You know, as he started out, he was a young guy, and so he grew up listening and playing with all of those greats. So he had a wealth of knowledge and experience that helped expand the burgeoning scene in the 60s, 70s, and even the 80s. He was a founding member of the Jazz Institute of Chicago.
Uh-huh.
So his mission was to help that genre grow and help people become more aware and more appreciative of jazz. His own personal style was sort of a mix between, you know, the traditional New Orleans Dixieland style and the changes that came about as the musicians migrated up to Chicago and it morphed into the Chicago style. He kind of straddled those two styles of jazz very well. And then, of course, as he continued on in his career, it continued to change as he played with different bands, and he never left the traditional style, but he became a little bit more mainstream as he got older because that's where the audience was taking the genre. But certainly his style was always one of a traditional and a Dixieland sound.
Now, I understand that the Chicago Jazz Festival did a tribute to the memory and the legacy of your father. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
They did. Jazz Festival, my father passed in May of 2008, and the Jazz Festival was in August, you know, at the time of his passing. I always knew how appreciated he was and how many people enjoyed his music, but when he passed, it really struck me how many emails and calls and letters and tributes that went out to him. It was incredible. And so, of course, the Jazz Institute and the Chicago Jazz Festival wanted to honor his legacy, and they did a little tribute during the festival, trying to remember the musicians that were involved. Art Hoyle, Dan DiLorenzo, goodness, I should know off the top of my head who they all were.
Wasn't Eric Schneider part of that group?
Eric Schneider, absolutely. Yeah. Those were all people that Dad had played with and played with frequently and for many years, and they were all very happy to be there and honor his memory. They did a number of songs that he used to do, and Art even did a little bit of his signature tune, Strutting with Some Barbecue, and got the crowd going, and it was a wonderful thing to see.
Tell us about your dad as a jazz educator.
One of his most enjoyable experiences, other than being on the bandstand and playing for an audience, was imparting his knowledge to the newer generation, newer musicians who were either just learning about jazz or who had some interest in jazz and had played it before, but wanted to learn its true roots and where it really came from. And obviously he was a walking, talking, playing encyclopedia, you know, and so the schools that invited him in to lecture to their jazz studies programs really were excited to have him do that because there was no better way for their students to learn than from someone who had been there. You know, the questions that they would ask him, he could tell them from firsthand experience as opposed to actually reading it in a book or hearing it from a descendant of a great musician. So he really took pride in being able to go out into schools and help the younger generations learn more about music.
I understand there's also a connection with your father and Swedish royalty. Tell us a little bit about that.
my dad traveled the world during his career. He may have been actually better known and more appreciated in Europe than he was in the States because they have a completely different concept and recognition of jazz over there. And that's not to say that, you know, that we don't, but it's very different. It's a whole different mindset. And jazz is a huge, it's almost like rock and roll, like it is here in the States. It's almost like that over there.
Definitely.
So he was well sought after in Europe for tours, and he toured frequently. He was the command performer for the King of Sweden's inauguration, I believe, on, I know at least one occasion, it may have been twice. But yeah, the King of Sweden actually called and asked him wow. to perform for his inauguration. Which,
that is so impressive, I tell you.
Yeah, and I didn't even learn about that until after I was grown. You know, you take those things for granted when you're a kid, but some of the things that I've learned now that he's gone have just astounded me, and I've sort of kicked myself for not paying attention sooner.
So tell us about the new work.
My father's last recording is the one that's been newly released. I released it on what would have been his 100th birthday, November 1st of 2012. And the music that is on this two-disc CD set, it's called Franz Jackson Milestone. And it's so titled because it is the music that was recorded live at his 95th birthday concert that
wow.
I organized for him in 2007.
It
was a three-hour concert of essentially nonstop music. And my dad played every single note. It wasn't expected at all. I brought in about two dozen musicians and singers that he had worked with throughout his career, and they came on his 95th birthday, and it was essentially a big jam session. I had, you know, a set list, and they played the tunes on the set list, but it was the most exhilarating and special night that I have in recent memory. We were fortunate enough to record it, and it wasn't recorded with the intent to issue a CD. We just recorded it to have it, and 6 months later, he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you know, I was just so thankful that we were, A, able to do it for him, because it was a night that he just talked about for months afterward, and B, happy to have the music that I could listen to and recall all the wonderful events from that night. It wasn't until a few months after his death that I was listening to the recording, and I thought, my God, this is amazing. This happened with no rehearsal, with no sound check. Some of these people had never even met one another. And it was as if they had been playing together forever. And I kept telling myself, more people need to hear this. I need to put this out on a CD. But, you know, it was a fairly daunting task. And it took me 5 years to get it done, but I did it, and it's now a two-disc set, and it's his final recording, and I think he would be pleased, and I would just love for more people to have that in their libraries. It's what I call the final brick in his tremendous foundation, and I hope people are made aware of it, and they'll pick it up and listen to it and take great pleasure in knowing that he was playing at his best. At age 95, he blew
95, yes.
3 hours virtually nonstop, and then went to the after party for another 3 or 4 hours. I mean, it was truly a wonderful celebration.
I tell you, I'm very impressed with the album cover itself. I mean, it's your father playing a saxophone against the backdrop of the Chicago skyline at night. I tell you, that gets my attention.
Yeah, thank you. I'm happy because that was my design concept, so I'm excited. I put the two images together and thought, what better representation could there possibly be than just having Chicago's backdrop and him blowing, because it just says it all.
It sure does, and it's very, very impressive work. How would you like your dad to be remembered?
Wow, that's a really great question. I think first and foremost, he would like to be remembered for the joy that he produced when he played. I don't think anything gave him a greater sense of satisfaction than having a happy audience. He wasn't a cerebral performer. He didn't want people sitting in their chairs and listening politely. He wanted them to clap and to dance and to sing along and to have a good time. It was a party to him. So I think I would probably defer to that kind of a memory. I would hope that people would remember him for his contributions, of course, because he gave so much to the music and to the industry and to the Chicago area in particular. That would be my desire in terms of having him remembered. But I think he would want people to just continue playing his music and to engage, to take it in and to take it forward. Play it for your kids, play it for your grandkids, and keep it going.
And you know, that's exactly what we're going to do tonight. We're going to play your father's music throughout set two and give the WKMS listening area a chance to hear the vast range of the work that your father did.
That's wonderful.
Michelle Jackson-Jewell, thank you for speaking with us this evening.
Thank you so much.